Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
There's a rather comprehensive piece from the Associated Press with the headline, 50 Years After Stonewall, LGBT Rights Are a Work in Progress. It starts talking about the unfinished business of the LGBT movement. I wonder what that might be, and what role do the Equality Act and the various SOGI laws being passed state by state have to do with that unfinished business? Joining us to talk about LGBT rights, SOGI laws, and the Equality Act, Emily Gao. She's director of the Richard and Helen DeVos Center for Religion and Civil Society at the Heritage Foundation. She has a Juris Doctor degree from Harvard Law School and formerly served as adjunct professor at George Mason University Law School. Emily, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you.
For the LGBTQ community, what do they consider their unfinished business?
Well, I think their legislative priority is to pass federal law that would include sexual orientation and gender identity as protected civil rights. I think that their cultural goals are expressed in the statement by Tim Gill, one of the major donors of the LGBT movement, who said the goal is to punish the wicked. And I think by that he meant people who disagree with their view on same-sex marriage and on gender identity or sex differences. So I think their long-term goal is to have ideological conformity, including through punishment of dissenters.
You have said that the Equality Act, quote, imposes sexual ideology on the nation that endangers religious freedom, freedom of speech, and parental rights by punishing those who dissent from political correctness. Go into a little more detail, if you would.
Well, I think the best example of that is the ongoing saga with the Colorado cake artist, Jack Phillips, who's now been sued for a third time simply because he will not use his creative talents to affirm the politically correct messages that the LGBT activists want him to affirm. In the first case that went to the Supreme Court, it was affirming support for same-sex marriage. And in the second and third cases, it's affirming the idea that a person can change their sex or that a person is born in the wrong body. Jack Phillips, you know, served everybody who walked into his store for 24 years, including LGBT customers, and continues to do so to this day. But really, you can see in his case, it is about disagreement over ideology, and the LGBT movement only wants freedom for those who agree with them. Those who don't agree with them, they're ready to go to tremendous lengths to punish them. Jack Phillips has suffered, you know, 40% loss of business. He's been harassed. He's had death threats against him and his family. And he's had 7 years of litigation.
What do we need to know about the Equality Act? Should it ever become law?
Well, people should understand the Equality Act, even if it doesn't become law, because it's a tremendous threat to the freedom of so many Americans. It goes so far beyond even religious liberty and freedom of speech. You can see with all the threats to women and girls that we're hearing about in the news with the transgender sports policies. Girls and women are losing competitions. They're being physically endangered by stronger male competitors. With the transgender bathroom policies, unfortunately, we've seen sexual assault of a kindergarten girl at a school in Georgia when her school adopted a transgender bathroom policy. In Alaska, there's a women's homeless shelter that's being sued for not allowing in a biological male who identifies as a female. So there are privacy and safety concerns as well as liberty and equality concerns. And we do believe that, you know, every single person has human dignity and should be treated with respect. And that includes LGBT people. But unfortunately, the Equality Act doesn't treat everyone with respect. It elevates the ideology of a few and will punish those who don't agree with that ideology.
With respect to the transgender movement, what are the goals of the transgender rights movement in particular?
Well, again, I think a lot of their efforts are geared towards affirmation of their view of gender dysphoria. So gender dysphoria is, I think, universally acknowledged to be a serious medical condition where people feel extreme discomfort with their biological sex. On that much we can agree, but then we diverge on, you know, how do you treat it? The transgender movement recommends something called gender affirmative care, which involves social transition for children as young as 4 years old, and then giving puberty-blocking drugs to 8-year-olds, then on to cross-sex hormones, and ultimately surgical interventions. This is highly controversial in the medical community. Even the Obama Centers for Medicare and Medicaid were expressing reservations about these recommendations. But we see that the transgender movement, these activists, are saying that those people, including parents, who don't agree with their transgender medical recommendations are guilty of child abuse. And we've even seen in Ohio that a judge sided with the transgender activists and terminated the parental rights of a couple who did not want testosterone administered to their daughter for gender dysphoria.
In an AP story recently, talking about the history of the LGBT community, and in particular its origins in Stonewall, Jennifer Boylan, a transgender writer, is quoted by saying that Donald Trump's election, quote, gave all sorts of mouth breathers permission to spew ignorance, hatred, and stupidity, undoing decades of progress. People who know nothing about trans people and our unique challenges have no qualms weighing in. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think that, you know, Americans should be free to express both views on the transgender movement. They should be free to express opposing viewpoints on the recommended medical treatments from the transgender movement. And unfortunately, what we see from the transgender activists is that they want to silence viewpoints that don't conform to their ideology. And a really good example of that is the way that they treat counseling. So in several states, 15 states, I believe, counseling is now banned for minors, you know, who might be seeking help with same-sex attraction or with gender dysphoria. The only kind of counseling that is permitted in those states is counseling that would push children towards hormonal and surgical interventions or push them towards developing same-sex relationships. The other viewpoints are completely illegal. And so, unfortunately, we just see an incredible amount of intolerance from LGBT activists towards those who simply disagree with them on marriage and sex differences.
You mentioned early on SOGI laws. Give us some examples of SOGI laws that have been passing in the United States so far.
Well, for example, the Anchorage, Alaska case with the Hope Center, the women's homeless shelter. It's under that local ordinance that it enabled a biological man to sue this women's homeless shelter for, you know, deciding that it should only be for women. This is where the transgender movement really makes a false analogy between race and gender identity. It is wrong to separate people in places like homeless shelters or bathrooms by race, because race has nothing to do with what water fountain you should drink from, or what homeless shelter, or what bathroom you should use. But gender, or sex, actually does have a lot to do with, you know, which bathroom you should use, or which homeless shelter you should be admitted to, because we separate the sexes, we separate males and females for privacy and safety concerns. And so, unfortunately, these SOGI policies and SOGI laws, they erase the valid distinctions that we have in our laws based on sex, which are there to protect women and girls. We see with the transgender sports policies, you know, in Connecticut, a 16-year-old girl lost a couple places in the track meet that she should have won. She should have come in, you know, probably fifth place, and she ended up coming in eighth place because there were two boys who took first and second place in her competition. And now Selena Soule has filed a complaint with the Department of Education based on Title IX, because the transgender policies are actually creating discrimination against women and girls. And as we've seen in so many states, these SOGI policies have led to lawsuits against wedding vendors. So not only Jack Phillips, but the case that was recently sent back to Oregon by the Supreme Court for the Klein family, who owns Sweet Cakes by Melissa in Oregon, Baronelle Stutzman, who's just filed a petition for certiorari at the Supreme Court after being sued by the state of Washington. She served her customer, who's gay, for 9 years with flowers, but simply declined to create a floral arrangement for a same-sex wedding. So all over, we're seeing disagreements on marriage and sex differences turned into lawsuits.
Advocates for the SOGI law say that they're simply trying to end discrimination and allow integration of LGBTQ Americans. Is that true?
Well, I think we need to look at the actual effects of the law. I mean, people, you know, they can state their motivations, but we need to look at what the laws are actually doing. And in the case of these therapy bans, it's actually harming people. Walt Heyer is a very outspoken man who used to live as a woman, and he has since said that, you know, if he didn't have counseling to help him with gender dysphoria, he would have committed suicide. And so by banning this type of counseling that actually helps people become comfortable with their own bodies, it's really creating greater risk of harm to people struggling with gender dysphoria. So that's just one example of the actual effects of these types of restrictions of religious liberty and freedom of speech that, in this case, it really impacts the people who are seeking counseling. The people who, you know, could really be helped by counseling are the ones who are suffering.
Do you think that SOGI laws are now a permanent fixture in the American legal landscape?
Well, I don't know how permanent they are, but they certainly, you know, have affected a large number of Americans, because there are 22 states that have passed SOGI laws, and Washington, D.C., and then, you know, hundreds of localities have passed SOGI laws. But I think people are starting to see that, you know, these SOGI laws do create harms to more and more victims. The reason why there have been so many people speaking out about the harms to women and girls is because we're actually seeing those harms to women and girls as a result of SOGI policies in the states. We're actually seeing, unfortunately, sexual assaults happen. We're seeing girls losing in athletic competitions across the country. We're seeing multiple lawsuits with homeless shelters. So I think, you know, time will tell, but one thing is clear, the longer and longer we have with SOGI laws, the more and more we see that real people are harmed by these laws.
Advocates for SOGI laws often, as you mentioned a moment ago, compare them to civil rights laws of the mid-20th century. Do you think in terms of law for law, that's a fair comparison?
Again, I think it is a false analogy to compare race to sexual orientation and gender identity. There's no rational basis to separate people into different facilities based on their race. There's no reason to put people in separate athletic leagues because of their race, or separate sleeping facilities, or separate water fountains, or separate bathrooms. And that's what happened under segregation and under Jim Crow. But there is a very good reason that has been supported in our law for decades, and that is the separation between the sexes. It was Ruth Bader Ginsburg who actually said, when she wrote the opinion for the decision that made Virginia Military Institute co-ed, she actually said there will need to be separate spaces for men and women to disrobe, to perform bodily functions, and to sleep. There is a rational basis for separating men and women, and in fact, it's a very compelling interest that the government has in protecting the safety and the privacy of both sexes. And that's why you see, you know, students across the country actually suing their school districts, because they simply want to have safety and privacy when they go in the locker room or the bathroom. They don't want to see the opposite sex. That's both boys and girls who are suing their school districts.
How do you explain the push for these laws at a time, I think arguably, when the LGBTQ community and individuals are experiencing unprecedented levels of affirmation and celebration by government, by big business, by academia, by the general public? How do you explain that?
Well, I think the fact that the cultural and market forces are so overwhelmingly supportive of not only LGBT rights, I mean, LGBT people have the same rights as everybody else, but supportive of LGBT culture and LGBT values. I mean, the fact that the nation is celebrating Gay Pride Month and that, you know, 200 corporations have supported the Equality Act, I think all that shows that there really is not a pervasive situation in this country where people are being discriminated against simply because they're gay or because they identify as transgender. And so I think it points to, again, the incredible difference between the situation that was faced by African Americans under Jim Crow and the status of LGBT people today. I mean, actually, we see that same-sex couples have the highest incomes of any couples in the United States. So as for why they are continuing to push for the law to recognize LGBT ideology and to elevate it to the level of a civil right, again, I simply point back to what Tim Gill said, you know, who has donated hundreds of millions of dollars to pass SOGI laws in the States. He said his goal is to punish the wicked, and that's people who disagree with them. So I think a lot of it is about compelling agreement with their view of marriage and sex differences.
Finally, someone might say that these laws are needed today because, well, the pendulum could always swing back against the LGBTQ community. How do you respond?
Well, again, I think people who are LGBT should be treated with respect according to the human dignity that everybody has. And we would not want to see anybody discriminated against simply because they're gay or transgender. But that's really not what's happening in this country. We aren't seeing people being turned away from restaurants or hotels simply because they're gay or transgender. As African Americans were turned away, what we're seeing is disagreements being treated as discrimination. What we're seeing is people trying to force bakers and florists to support same-sex marriage or to support transgender ideology. And what we're seeing is women and girls being harmed by transgender ideology that doesn't take into account their safety and privacy concerns. And we're seeing parental rights also being trampled by the codification of transgender ideology into the law and medical professionals' conscience rights as well. So I think it's really important that the country clearly understand that discrimination is wrong, but disagreement is not discrimination.
Emily Gao is director of the Richard and Helen DeVos Center for Religion and Civil Society at the Heritage Foundation. She has a Juris Doctor degree from Harvard Law School, formerly served as an adjunct professor at George Mason University Law School. You can find a link to the Heritage Foundation at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Emily, thanks.
Thank you.
If your family uses one of those content filtering services out there so that movies and other video content that your kids want to see but you can't let them see is actually watchable for them, you want to listen in the next few minutes of Issues, Etc. Hollywood is actually mounting a legal battle against content filtering. We're going to talk about it with Rebecca Curtis on the other side of the break, co-author of the book Ladylike, Living Biblically. Stay tuned.
Church music directors can find a new community at Prelude to Postlude, the CPH music blog. Learn helpful tips for managing music ministry and involving members, and meet the composers of some of your favorite new pieces. Plus, find suggestions of music to use for special services, and preview some of our newest works with free samples you can use at your church. Visit us at preludetopostlude.org.
From New York's beautiful Hudson Valley, visit us at the Lutheran Church of Our Redeemer, Peekskill, New York. A small, confessional, conservative Lutheran church with traditional Lutheran liturgical worship, gospel-rich, shenanigan-free. For more information, visit us at ourredeemerlcms.org.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is the Lutheran Federal Credit Union Ministry of the Month. During June, if you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or if you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Good for you. Good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.